Now, TalkZone presents the Cyber Advisor. This is the show that looks at the people and events that move the financial markets and shape our economy. Here's your host for the Cyber Advisor, David Revelle.
Well, you caught me. I'm here going over some of the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers at the last minute. You know, it's in the summertime, it's August, it's supposed to be very slow, and yet the amount of news and the amount of things that are happening in the market right now are truly astounding. What a great time to be around. Well, hi, everybody. I'm your host, Dave Revelle, and if you'd like to join us on today's shows, our lines are open. You can dial toll-free 888-463-6748. That's 888. Go for it. 888-463-6748. Or reach me anytime on my email. It's dave@thecyberadvisor.com. Well, it's as I say, a very busy show today. In the first segment, we'll continue to follow this incredible bull run in the market and how to put it all in perspective. Is the economy ready to turn the corner into real prosperity? Or is this just one more step on what may prove to be a very long road back to financial health? In the second part of the show, we'll listen to a very telling interview with David Castillo. He's a senior managing director of Further Lane Securities and has been around for about 22 years. The reason that's kind of interesting is 22 years ago, really that whole field of collateralized debt obligations, and we'll talk about this and go through all the names and all the acronyms and all of that. But anyway, the whole field really came about 22 years ago, and so he's been in from the very beginning. David's one of the leading traders in structured investment vehicles, and he will tell you how there is a connection between how these kind of esoteric Wall Street investments affect the ability of small businesses across the country to gain the financing that they need to run their businesses. Also in the second part of that segment, we have an interview with Gordon Nixon. Now, Gordon's a very interesting fellow. He's the president of the Royal Bank of Canada. That's one of the big five Canadian banks, and has a very different view on the economy and how a bank should run. But what I find really fascinating is that Gordon Nixon came up as an investment banker. Now, you may recall in the old days when there was a law called Glass-Steagall that there was an iron wall between investment banking on the one hand and commercial banking on the other, and you never saw people cross. Today, we see people cross that line all the time. Kerry Killinger at Washington Mutual was one of the first. These are investment people who move over to run a commercial bank. Kind of an interesting thing. I think as you listen to Gordon that you're going to hear somebody who runs a bank just like we wish they were run, and in fact how most of us probably think they are still run, although unfortunately probably not. He has very little leverage on his books, and he's very long on investigating who he's going to loan money to, what we call in the business due diligence. He's a real banker's banker with insight into how our banks should operate. And finally, in the third segment of the show, we'll listen to Mary Shapiro. Now, Mary Shapiro is the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission and one of the very first people that Barack Obama nominated to fill her position. She was, in fact, a nominee designate before he became president, before he was inaugurated. And on the very day that he was inaugurated, one of the first people he rushed to put into office was Mary Shapiro. I think that indicates how important that President Obama sees the financial markets and how critical to his presidency. As the financial markets go, as the economy goes, so goes Obama's presidency. Be fascinating to watch what she looks at it in this interview, which was heard on CNBC. She goes through and tells us exactly what her priorities are at the SEC currently. And believe me, they are not the priorities that I would have, and I doubt that they are the priorities that you would have. It seems to me that we're in the middle of a very tenuous financial situation, even today, even in spite of what the market is rallying out of. And it is not time to be it is time to be focused like a laser on what we can do to help this economy and not some of the other rather esoteric reforms that it seems like this administration continues to want to go after. So as we kind of go, let's take a moment and go down to the exchange and see how the market did this week. Now, on Monday, the market was off to a great beginning. The Dow was up over 100 points, NASDAQ up 30, and the Standard & Poor's surmounted the 1,000 mark for the first time in the Obama presidency. It settled in at 1,002.63. That's a 1.5% rise on Monday. The last time the Standard & Poor's 500 was above 1,000 was on Election Day, November 4th, for President Obama. The market was experiencing relief, said the Wall Street Journal, at the imminent resolution of the long-fought campaign that helped the broad-based stock market jump more than 4% back then on Inauguration Day, 1.5% on Monday. Of course, investors know that Senator Obama's transformation to president wasn't much of a lasting solve for investors. The Wall Street Journal says, and I quote, "Shares continued on a bumpy ride downward until the S&P 500 hit a closing nadir, fingers crossed, of 676. Incidentally, the low that day, intraday, was 666, a rather devilish number, points out the Wall Street Journal. All this began with a mid-September collapse of Lehman Brothers. You may remember that controversy, as a lot of people felt that Lehman Brothers should have been bailed out but was not, and that marked the beginning of this whole crisis. The Dow is down about 19% since Lehman's bankruptcy, NASDAQ down about 11%, and the Standard & Poor's, even still today, down about 20%. And oh, if you're wondering, the Standard & Poor's first closed over 1,000 back on February 2nd, 1998. Well, that's how Monday was looking. On Tuesday, we opened with a good old-fashioned short squeeze. Now, many of you may not be familiar with what a short squeeze is, but basically what happens is, in the markets, you're able to go short a stock by selling first and buying back later. You sell at what you perceive to be the higher price now, and buy it back later at what you hope will be the lower price later. Now, Whole Foods, which is that trendy, upscale, organic, natural food store that a lot of people like to frequent, was the object of the short squeeze. Whole Foods was up 19% on Tuesday as the squeeze got underway. What happens in a squeeze is, when you sell short, you have to borrow the shares out in the market, and shares are borrowed and delivered against your sale. Unfortunately, however, that exists only as long as the broker can keep the borrowed shares outstanding. When too many people have shorted a particular stock, the broker has to, quote, buy you in, that is, buy your stock position out, because he no longer has shares that he can borrow and deliver against your position. According to J.P. Morgan, one of the analysts at J.P. Morgan, 17% of Whole Foods' float was short, and the company has suffered several sell-side downgrades this quarter, setting the stage for the squeeze. In other words, there was a tremendous 17% of all stock outstanding in the security was short. Basically, it gets rather technical here, but only margin accounts deliver against the short. And so that is a tremendous position to have short, and they simply could no longer borrow any longer, so they instead bought in the short positions. A lot of the upside surprise yesterday stemmed, and this is on Tuesday, stemmed from management's newfound attention to cost cutting. That was perceived that there was a turnaround at Whole Foods. Morgan Stanley again added, "We believe company investments into lower prices and helping hand from produce deflation have turned the tide on sales trends." RBC Capital Markets noted, "It seems clear from a conference call that management is seeing signs of life in its stores. Management noticed improving traffic trends through the quarter and evidence that trading down is easing." So there it was, Whole Foods, tremendous short squeeze. The Dow in general on Tuesday was up 33 points, the NASDAQ up 270, and the Standard & Poor's ended up 3 points. The price-earnings ratio, incidentally, on Whole Foods is estimated to be about 21 times a $1.20 estimate for 2010, making it not a particularly inexpensive stock. Well, we came into Wednesday, with the market riding pretty high on a rally that has extended since March. But we had kind of a modest day on Wednesday with the Dow off 37 points, the NASDAQ off 18, and the Standard & Poor's off 3. But an interesting thing had happened on the day before. You may recall last week, we had an interview with one of the leading railroad executives, and the reason we did that was because of a thing called the Dow Theory. Charles Dow, who was the originator of the of Dow Jones, including the Wall Street Journal, and an interesting way to invest. He created what's called the Dow Theory. Dow Theory, kind of easy to explain, not always, as we'll see, as easy in practice, but said essentially that once an uptrend is determined in the industrial average, then it needs to be checked out in the transportation average, and it'll be assumed that we are in a bull trend if both of those averages are going up coincident to each other. So what happened the day before on Tuesday for devotees of the Dow Theory, the place to look was the transportation index. As the Wall Street Journal points out, Dow Theory can be quickly summed up by one phrase, quote, what the industrials make, the transportations take. Roughly translated, that means market watchers who see the industrials and the transports moving in the same direction view the pattern as confirmation of a market trend. And as of Tuesday, it appeared that both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the Dow Jones Transportation Average were moving in the same direction and above their June highs. Longtime Dow Theory follower Richard Russell, one of the people who you really should get to know, he's based out of San Diego. I believe he's been in the market for at least 40 years and written his Dow Theory newsletter. Believes that the Dow Jones Transportation Average delivered a large positive signal on July 23 when the transports broke through their June high and in doing so confirmed the recent rise in the broader markets. Quote, according to Dow Theory, the trend of the market had turned bullish. The fog cleared, the clouds parted, the underlying facts had changed. Based on my Dow Theory interpretation, I turned bullish, Russell wrote in a letter published today. Very significant. Richard Russell has not been bullish on the market for at least a couple of years. But despite his belief in the bull market signal he saw on July 23, Russell remains somewhat cautious about the recent run-up in shares, mostly because, he says, sentiment never really hit a bleak tone. That signals a true bear market bottom in which, quote, people are disgusted with the stock market. He added that just a couple of months after the March lows, quote, everybody was still optimistic. Well, we moved into Thursday on a high note, but again, we had kind of a modest off day with the Dow falling 24 points, the NASDAQ off 20, and the Standard & Poor's off about 5.5 points. Kind of an interesting day because finally some of the financial stocks were brought into question. Bond insurer Ambac was seemingly left for dead last month when Standard & Poor's rating services slashed the company's rating deep into junk territory, citing Ambac's terrible financial condition. But that seemed to be a distant memory for investors on Thursday who were driving the shares of Ambac to the top of the New York Stock Exchange list of percentage gainers. Ambac was anticipated. Let's see, Ambac thought that they would have about a earnings of a slight, they had earned about $1.7 billion a year before, but that was not expected to continue. Ambac is, along with MBIA, one of the leading residential mortgage-backed securities insurers, and that world continues to get worse. MBIA, which also surged that day about 13%, Ambac about 20%, but the fundamentals didn't seem to bear it out. Ambac is the same company that Standard & Poor's downgraded, citing the significant deterioration in Ambac's insured portfolio of non-prime residential mortgage-backed securities and related collateralized debt obligations, which has required the company to strengthen reserves for accounts for higher projected claims. The additional reserves will have a significant negative effect on operating results, which we believe will likely cause a surplus to decline below regulator minimums. Back in July, Ambac said, well, we expect to have a quarterly loss of $1.3 billion due to more write-downs on derivative contracts and backing losses on those securities. So they were anticipating $1.3 billion loss, but in spite of that, had a huge rally yesterday. In fact, earnings came out today minus $2.4 billion. Never let a loss get in the way of a good bull market. Well, as you know, the market has continued today with a little less than 45 minutes left in trading. Markets are up across the board. We anticipate about a 2% gain in the Dow, Standard & Poor's, and also in the NASDAQ. Earnings, however, have continued to disappoint. We've kind of flagged this for you. I think it is very significant and very important to watch. Don't compare. Our view is you never compare the actual earnings versus the estimate. Instead, compare the actual versus what they did last year. There were five or six disappointing earnings this week again. Allstate Insurance, 55 cents was their earnings this quarter versus $1.24 last year. Marsh McLennan, also a large insurer, 33 cents, down from 41 cents last year. Baker Hughes, 41 cents, down from $1.36. Chevron, 87 cents, down from $2.90 the year before. We don't seem to hear any congressional calls for support of the oil companies, but they are certainly not performing well now. Pulte Homes had their loss expand this year, 74 cents of loss versus 63 cents the year before. And Weyerhaeuser, the big conglomerate up in the Northwest, went to a loss of 59 cents versus a profit of 3 cents the year before. We saw flat to good earnings in Kraft Foods, CVS, Cephalon, Humana, and Tyson Foods, all looking to do fairly well for the quarter. But in general, we saw the big news of the week being the Labor Department report that non-farm payrolls, the unemployment rate had slid to 9.4%. That's down a tick from last month, with payrolls fell by 247,000. It was significantly below what we have been going at, about a half a million, and below the 275,000 that economists had anticipated. Investors welcome to the better than expected earnings report from American International Group, AIG, which was up by about 19% this year. Standard & Poor's up, as we say, about 2% today. There's been a sea change in the perception of risk related to these companies, said David Kovacs, Chief Investment Officer of Turner Investment Partners here in Berwyn. It started with better housing data, and that started to get people thinking that some of the earlier assumptions about bad debt on financial books were perhaps too severe. On Friday, the Dow Jones Financial Total Stock Market Index is up 24% since just July 13, less than a month, outpacing the broader market index. And it's up an unbelievable 96% since March 9, when the major stock market index has hit their low for the current cycles. Other market measures have been headed high also. The technology-focused NASDAQ Composite Index was up 1.4%, and the Russell Small Stock 2000 was up 2.5%. Oil prices today have been lower, with the front-month contract down about 62 cents at $71.32 a barrel. Treasury prices have sunk as investors' appetite for risk rose. The 10-year note fell 25/32 to yield 3.85%. The dollar is also strong across the board. Well, that's it for our recap for the week. It's time to take a short break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more right after this.